The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
199,000 jobs added in December. That was a big miss. But these numbers, the ones released today, did not include the effects of Omicron, which means that you could still have a significant effect, a negative effect, when the Omicron surge is factored in next month.
The Chinese authorities have put an entire city into lockdown after the discovery of just 3 asymptomatic COVID cases. Residents won't be allowed to leave their homes in Yuzhou, which has a population of 1.2 million. Only workers involved in epidemic prevention are allowed out.
The level of heat that we have in the labor market is consistent not just with high inflation, but it's consistent with accelerating inflation. And there isn't going to be a path to less inflation without a cooler labor market. And I think that has to be sobering.
Today, the Supreme Court will hear challenges to 2 of the Biden administration's vaccine policies. The requirements impact nearly 100 million private workers and healthcare workers. One measure requires large private companies to implement a vaccination requirement, but if the workers don't want to get the shot, they have to wear a mask and be tested weekly. The other requires workers at federal healthcare facilities to get the COVID-19 shot.
Quickly on inflation rate, how concerned are you about it?
I'm significantly concerned about it. The amount of money produced and is budgeted is a large increase. And yet, if it's not spent, it produces its own problems. The markets have a sensitivity to that. So cash, which most investors think is the safest investment, is, I think, the worst investment because it loses buying power. And then the important thing is to diversify one's portfolio well.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Big miss on the job numbers, a spike in treasury yields with rates rising to the highest level since before the pandemic, and what looks like a more aggressive Fed sent stock prices south this week with big rotations within the S&P 500. All 3 major indexes ended up in negative territory to start out the new year. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to the Financial Sense News Hour. Frank Barbera joins me at the top of the hour. Frank thinks we're into a correction, but remains positive on the markets longer term. We'll look at sector rotation and the possibility of a gold breakout that could be around the corner. This is our annual forecast show as we take a look at the economy and the markets in the year ahead. We'll look at the consensus view, which is very subdued this year as we start out. In addition, we'll discuss the views on Wall Street from Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Charles Schwab, to macro strategist Francois Trahan. We'll also explore outside-the-box thinking with Byron Wien's 10 surprises, this year's wild cards, dogs of the Dow, and much, much more, and what is our most comprehensive outlook ever. But before that, let's take a look at what the stories that moved the markets this week with Ryan Poplava. Ryan?
Let's start by saying Happy New Year to our Financial Sense listeners. We want to wish you a successful year in your investments, so stay with us this year as we anticipate the trading will be more difficult than last. And to kick things off, interest rates were the big driver in trading this week and may be telling of what's more to come. The Fed had some hawkish comments about its balance sheet runoff plans in the FOMC minutes Wednesday, and investors weren't quite ready to digest that. Some of the economic numbers began to cool and decelerate after hitting some record levels late in the year, and finally the stock rotation, because of the rise in interest rates, has been very pronounced this week, out of growth and into value. Now let's dig in into the weeds on these issues. The 10-year Treasury yield rose 12 basis points on Monday to 1.63% and was at 1.78% last I checked mid-Friday. That's a total increase of almost 28 basis points in 1 week, one of the biggest moves in a week we've seen in a year. This week's move may have ended the consolidation in rates we saw transpire from the second and fourth quarter last year and was a pattern I highlighted in our investment videos on November 29th. You can find our free videos every Monday on our website as we talk about the fundamental and technical drivers affecting our investment decisions for clients. While initially the yield curve was widening at the onset of the move early in the week, the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee's minutes from the December meeting showed that participants felt it would be appropriate to reduce the size of the Fed's balance sheet at a faster pace than in the last normalization period, which came about 2 years after the first rate hike. So this time, we could see the Fed allow maturities of bills and notes to go without reinvestment soon after the first rate hike, which at this point is looking like March, according to the CME FedWatch tool, mid-Friday, with almost a 70% probability of occurring. That's up from previous estimates of around April or May for the first hike. We saw both the ISM services and manufacturing numbers for December decelerate, some from very high levels. The manufacturing index decelerated to 58.7 from 61.1 in November, and this is the 19th straight month of expansion. There was also some recognition that price pressures softened some, but supply chains are still a problem due to the rise in COVID infections and the strain it's putting on staffing. ISM services decelerated from a record 69.1 in November to 62 in December, so still very elevated. The soft number, again, isn't a surprise as a result of the record number in November, as well as, well, again, we have a rise in COVID cases. Unlike the manufacturing survey, in services, prices did continue to rise. Factory orders increased in November, up 1.6%, and the December jobs report was weak, only up 199,000 with a drop in the unemployment rate to 3.9% from 4.2%. Hourly earnings increased by about 0.6%, bringing the average over the 12 previous months to an increase of 4.7% for hourly earnings. The key takeaway is that the Fed is close to achieving its full employment goal, and the tight labor market and higher wage growth runs the risk of persistent inflation. Obviously, that's where the Fed is concentrating right now with all the comments we've seen for the past 2 months. The combination of a rise in rates and the end to some tax loss harvesting, given the new year, has influenced a rotation out of growth stocks and into value stocks. Midday Friday, the S&P technology sector was down about 4% for the week, with the S&P 500 financial sector up 5.4%, benefiting from that rotation, and the energy sector up a whopping 10.4% for the week, benefiting again from that rotation out of growth. Those are some really big moves in just 1 week. So that's it for this week's wrap-up. The key drivers, again, the rise in interest rates, a very key tell that was causing a rotation out of growth stocks and into value stocks. And then, of course, we had the FOMC minutes, which shared some views that we might see a runoff in the balance sheet a lot sooner than we did in the last normalization period. Up next is our technician and guest expert, Frank Barbera, and after that, Jim's big picture and forecast for 2022.
FS Insider spoke with Lisa Chai, senior research analyst at Robo Global, about her most recent report, Rethinking the Logistics Roadmap, Using Technology to Transform the Supply Chain. Lisa says we are seeing swelling demand and increasing reliance on automation, robotics, and AI when it comes to many trends that we see today. Here's a clip of what she told listeners this week.
So McKinsey said that 10 years of e-commerce adoption was compressed into 3 months during 2020, and that's all driven from the global pandemic. So obviously, we're seeing this major acceleration in e-commerce sales driven by the stay-at-home culture that we had last year. But at the same time, e-commerce was the fastest growing segment of the retail industry for the last 10 years, even before the pandemic. Pandemic just accelerated all of this, right? So this is a structural shift that's happening, and it's only moving faster. And I think retailers have no option but to incorporate automation, artificial intelligence, and other supply chain solutions in order to survive.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
If you're seeking financial advice and how to invest in today's markets, Financial Sense Wealth Management can help. From setting up or providing advice on 401k plans, managing corporate cash balances in a zero interest rate environment, to helping individuals, foundations, and businesses achieve their financial goals. Give Financial Sense Wealth Management a call today at 888-486-3939. Let us work together to help you get on the path to success. Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you.
Call now at 888-486-3939 or email grow@financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Well, here we are, our first show of the year, as the markets begin to correct. Is this a correction, as many are predicting, for 2022, or is this the beginning of something bigger? Well, let's find out. Joining us on the program is Frank Barbera. Frank, let's begin with the major indexes, but I want to focus on the NASDAQ because we have what we call the Fab Five. Reminds me of the Nifty 50 in the 70s. You've had these five big technology stocks that have driven the S&P, the NASDAQ, and the major indexes, and now we're seeing a correction, especially in the NASDAQ. What's your take here?
The top five NASDAQ stocks have started to plateau. And they've built something that looks like a distribution pattern here in the short term. That to me looks like it probably will continue to go lower. I think this year started off with a sort of negative troika of two or three events. The first event was day one of the new year when the bond yield exploded higher and ETFs like IEF and TLT, which is the 10-year and 30-year bond, dropped very sharply. The first day of the year, TLT, which is the 20-year bond, was down $3. And that's been under relentless pressure, price pressure to the downside. And that's correlated to upward pressure in yields. And upward pressure in long duration yields is a negative for technology stocks, which have very high often PE ratio. So they get lumped in with a sort of long duration assets. And the sharp move up in yields, which has been pretty much relentless all 4 or 5 days, you know, the whole week of this new year, has put the NASDAQ under extreme pressure. And it's really interesting because when you look at the broad market in the NASDAQ versus those big five, even though the big five have weakened a bit, across the broader range of the NASDAQ market, you see, you know, a lot of stocks really getting hit hard and making new, not only 12-month lows, but in some cases, 2-year and 3-year lows. The deterioration in some corners of the tech area, like IT, information technology, software, has been remarkable. I'll give you a couple of names. A Snap, big popular name, was $83 on September 24th of last year. You can buy all you want right now for $42. That's a 50% decline. Coupa Software, which was a big glamour name going into February of last year, was $377 a share at the high. You can buy all you want right now for $135, down 64% in less than a year. Fastly, about a year and a half ago, $136 a share, at $32 a share right now. Roku was $491 last July. That's $201 right now. That's down 59%. And Twilio, $457 last February. That's down to $243, down 47%. And that list goes on and on and on. I probably could have put another 50 or 100 names that have had big declines like that. So you really have a split. You have those big ones that are still holding up by and large pretty well, but they look toppy. And you have the broad market on the NASDAQ in tech that has been weakening very substantially and consistently over time, where those PE ratios have been coming in. I think we've seen an upside breakout in yields over the last few days, JP. On the 30-year, we broke out of a trend line connecting the May high of 2021 and the October high. That came in about 205, and we're at 2.12 now. So it looks like yields are turning up, and I think that's a bit of a headwind for tech. I'm not that bearish on tech. To me, it looks like the NASDAQ could pull back another 7 to 9%. I don't even think this is going to be a 10% correction. The S&P probably something 5 to 7. You know, we might get down to 4,300 or 4,400 on the S&P. That's a strong support level on the S&P 500. So I'm definitely in the correction camp. And I think big picture, you know, we have another run up more likely than not coming going into May, June of this year. That time, we're going to have to be a lot more careful because some of these divergences that have been forming, I think, are going to be a lot more acute as this market continues to try and move higher.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that have been driving the markets. I mean, we've had 3 years of double-digit returns every single year as the government poured fiscal stimulus into the economy as a result of COVID. The Fed was pumping in $120 billion. Now they're pulling back, Frank. They're going to get done with taper by March, and the market is forecasting 3 rate hikes. What we've seen in the past were the last time they went through raising rates, it took them 5 years to get it there. And the minute there was a big blip in the market, they quickly reversed themselves. What's the likelihood if they do that? Because remember, so much of consumer confidence has been based on, you know, everything's going up. I mean, if your 401k plan is going up, the government's giving you free checks. I mean, you got to feel confident. What happens when that reverses?
That's a scary consideration. I think you get a bear market is what happens. But I think that's probably over time where we're heading. I think the, you know, when you look at margin debt, for example, right now, you could do a 12-month rate of change on margin debt, and that indicator is at 70%. There's only been 2 other times in history where that indicator had been at 70%. One was at the high in 2008, 2007, just before the global financial crisis. The other one was back in the high of the before the tech wreck in 2000. So you're at lofty, you know, historic valuations. And there are a lot of warning signs out there that are saying, you know, hey, there's a gathering storm, there's clouds gathering on the horizon. So this is not a time for people to really step up and take a whole lot of risk. I do think if the NASDAQ, I watched the QQQ, which is a proxy for the NASDAQ. We're trading around 380, 580 right now, up a little bit today. We just took a bounce off the December 3rd and the December 10th lows at around 377.50 on the Qs. To me, there's a big fat open gap from the close of October 13th last year at 359.78 on the Qs. And that's about 7% below where we are now. I bet that gap gets filled in the weeks ahead, probably by late January, early February. And then we'll see the beginning of what could be, you know, I think we will see new highs in the market. We will see a rally coming off some late January, early February lows. And that rally will probably take us into May. And then we have to ask the question, you know, is it time to sell in May and go away? To me, the rising interest rates are one headwind. The Fed withdrawing liquidity is another headwind as we move forward, the starting of hiking rates. And the leverage that's built into this system right now is a third big headwind. And I think the chances are they're not good that this market come May or come April is going to handle rate hikes very well. I know it's been telegraphed. The Fed's trying to be very gradualist in how it's treating the market with kid gloves. But even with all that, you know, you still kind of go back to the old Edson Gould rule from the 1970s of 3 steps and a stumble. And I think as they start to hike, you know, this might be 1 step and a stumble because this market is just very, very geared in terms of leverage. The other thing is that inflation is running very high. And I think the Fed's really in a box because if they hike a little bit and the market reacts sharply, they're going to have to reverse back towards easing. And that little hike is probably not going to be enough to bring the inflation rate under control. So we're looking at, you know, the missing hiking cycle, the entire hiking cycle that normally should have started a long time ago and should have been underway 6 months ago in terms of the Fed having a long time ago wound down its balance sheet purchases, and they should have been hiking already. that hiking cycle is eventually not taking place, and they're going to move directly into an easing cycle once I think the stock market has a larger correction. And that, I think, is going to set up two things, a drop in the dollar and a big move up in gold.
Well, you know, let's talk about the elephant in the room, and that's inflation, Frank. One thing that isn't being fully reflected in the inflation numbers is what's happening on the labor front. I mean, there's labor shortages. Last month, we had 4.5 million people quit their jobs and leave. We've got 12.5 million of unfilled jobs. I don't know where it's what it's like where you're at, but everywhere I go, shopping centers, we're hiring. I don't care if it's McDonald's, Pollo Loco, Ralph's Shopping. Everybody's trying to get workers. And I was hearing a story from a client of mine. There was a new restaurant that was supposed to open up in Phoenix. It was supposed to open up January 1st. And he went into the restaurant expecting, you know, to have lunch. And the owner was there and they were doing stuff inside, but there were no workers. He hasn't been able to fill the workers he needs to start a restaurant.
That's remarkable. Wow. You know, it is that way here. I see places with signs in the window looking for hiring all over. And I agree with you. I think everything I've seen and read about wages implies that wages are going up. So this certainly doesn't look like it's transitory. When you look at the supply chain issues, which are really being caused in large part by regulation and the trucking industry, by changes in rules in the shipping industry, where you know some of the container shippers are being forced to absorb costs that they previously weren't, sort of in the name of environmental green ideas. There's been some major structural changes, and I think a lot of that stuff is being embedded. And then also, then you have this enormous shortfall of supply in the energy sector. And energy alone is beginning to look, in fact, it looks very much like right now the late 1960s, early 1970s, where inflation was really starting to pick up. We saw interest rates starting to rise. Inflation was running way ahead of interest rates. There was a huge spread. And then the energy stocks started moving up. Initially, you had early strength in oil service and integrated oils. And then that continued to broaden out. It turned into a mania in the oil service stocks. And then the gold and mining and the silver mining stocks exploded. And so you had all of that moving up. Technology was moving down and getting hurt and ended up getting hurt really for about a decade. It made no progress. And things like retail and consumer discretionary were just punished. They dropped 80% over about 16 years between 1966 and, say, 1982. So you had the invisible crash where the Dow really went nowhere. But if you weren't in energy and you weren't in mining, you really got hurt if you were in some of those other sectors that had been working great before that. But you just had this secular turn. And that's what it feels like we're embarking on right now, Jim, is a really big secular turn.
Yeah, what really strikes me and what we're doing, and you can see this being reflected right now in Europe, where natural gas prices are up over 400%. They were going green, like Germany shutting down its nuclear power plants, and now they're buying energy from France. We're doing the same here, Frank, in California. We're going to shut down our second nuclear power plant in 2025. So we're trying to go green, but at the same time, we're going to need electricity to power all this green. And they're not doing anything. They're actually reducing the source of energy that's going to power these electric vehicles. So I see another crisis. It's not just the fact that the oil companies have not been investing with this bear market in oil, but it's also the environmental regulations. You have Wall Street now getting on the boards of major oil companies, asking them to divest themselves. And Frank, I don't think this is going to work.
No, I agree completely, Jim. I think it's patently obvious. You know, the U.S. should be making moves to, become energy independent once again with, building the pipelines, opening up reserves like ANWR, things like that. These are, you know, there's no real reason for this country to be dependent on other countries. And honestly, the nuclear thing, if you look around the world, China's building nuclear plants, France is building nuclear plants, India's building nuclear plants. You know, I know a lot of people, obviously, when you look at Fukushima in Japan a few years ago, it was a disaster. That nuclear, you know, you need a lot of regulation and a lot of structural monitoring in terms of making sure things are being upheld well. But you know, if you're gonna destroy the traditional fossil fuel oil and gas industry, which is what the policies seem to have been aimed at over the last few months, you certainly need to be like not negative on everything else and looking at nuclear because that's the only other option. So, to me, I don't know what we're doing, but I can tell you this much, putting all of that aside, to me, it looks like, you know, the oil market is in a big deficit. It's likely to stay there. And I think we're looking at higher energy prices. I can see oil service stocks, things like Schlumberger, some of the Baker Hughes, you know, really firming up. And to me, that's a sign that the market's waking up to the need to find more energy, some of the service companies to uncap wells. And right now, the big majors are not doing that much in that because they're facing regulatory headwinds. So things have to change politically first before you start seeing the release of some pent up supplies.
Well, it's nice to see one of the best performing sectors last year is energy, and energy's off to another good start this year. So, Frank, as we end here, what would you be doing with money right now? Would you be raising some cash, maybe sitting on the sidelines and watching how this plays out before you put that money to work? What would you be doing?
I would. Right now, I've raised a lot of cash. I have. The only stocks I'm still in are consumer staple stocks, which we bought back in November. Names like Campbell Soup, Kimberly-Clark, Procter & Gamble, Constellation Brands. They've been able to raise prices, and those companies are adapting to the inflation and passing on goods. And in many cases, you know, Keurig, Dr. Pepper, Campbell Soup, you get very nice dividend. And some of the valuations are not bad. So I find pockets of value where I can really put my head down and sleep well at night. But as far as tech goes, I would be checked out of the hotel right now, waiting with cash. There are some excellent names that are getting hit in tech at the right time. Maybe a couple of weeks from now, we'll get some oversold readings. But we're a long way from that right now. And from right now, I'd be waiting and biding my time. Watch and monitor and look for possible, you know, good quality issues at the right price. But I don't think we're there yet.
Okay, one final question. Gold, Frank, if you would have told me we would be seeing official inflation rates of 7% with the 10-year bond at 1.4% and sideways or declining gold prices, I would say you're crazy. None of that would add up. But that's exactly what we saw.
I've been waiting for gold. I was in gold recently. I've been trading it, hoping to see it break out above the resistance at 1830. And it just has. I think gold is looking at this and saying, okay, the tightening cycle, what little tightening cycle there is coming now. And so that's keeping sort of a lid on the gold price. It's been in a very, very narrow range between 1830 and 1760. But I think that's a boiling pot. And I think at some point, if the market, you know, if the market gets a little bit more untoward, the Fed will reverse course, probably in a, you know, a little bit down the line. But at some point, that policy is going to reverse. The Fed's going to go from tightening to easing. And I think at that point, gold will just unload. So I would say to investors, you know, continue to watch gold and silver, because ultimately, you know, they're the tried and true inflation protection. And this seems like we're in, you know, we could end up in a recession if the inflation rate moves up. There could be a slowdown, and maybe that's what gold is trying to perceive right now. But again, if you have a slowdown and you have a big correction in the stock market, ultimately you're going to get a change in Fed policy. And when that moment comes, I think the precious metals are going to decouple and explode. Because their protection of purchasing power, their they're sort of like anti-debt. And the big problem the world has right now is it has way too much debt. I think governments want to cheapen the value of money over time to help get out of that debt. And so that's really the genesis, the large theme for a major bull case for gold and silver, which is still out there. But it may take a little while longer for us to get there.
All right. Well, listen, as we close, Frank, one last question. Where are you having dinner? You eating inside or you have found a new restaurant?
My big favorite is the backyard barbecue right now, especially with the Omicron. I just got over COVID-19, a bad bout, and I'm terrified to go anywhere. I know it's mild, but I think, the good news, the really good news about the Omicron is if you look around the world, it seems to spike up very quickly and then come down, and it's been way more mild. So it looks like it may be the ending phase of this whole pandemic, and maybe it'll be gone in 2 or 3 weeks and we can all get back to life as usual. And then I'll start giving you a good list of where to eat.
Okay. Well, listen,
I've got the restaurant list all teed up. I just haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, Happy New Year to you and come you back too. Again.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
Frederick Kaufman is the author of a must-read book released in 2020 titled The Money Plot, A History of Currency's Power to Enchant, Control, and Manipulate. In his book, Fred explains how we now understand that the origin of money is not rooted in barter or even the physical properties of objects, as many tend to believe, but instead money is intrinsically tied to something that is much less tangible, but also much more powerful. Symbols, myths, and rituals, and yes, even magic. Frederick covered some of the key insights from his book with us this week, including how to think about money and value as large tech companies build out the next layer of the internet, the metaverse. Here's a clip of what he told listeners this week on FS Insider.
Money has always been this meta thing. And I think in the metaverse, I guess we're talking about all sorts of ways in which we can enter virtual reality. We are going to be doing the same things that we have been doing since the dawn of humanity, and that is using tokens, in other words, money, in order to get what we want and to achieve our desires. If you go to prehistory, before written history, we are talking about people who already have extremely sophisticated marriage rituals, funeral rituals, clothing rituals, religious rituals, but they have symbolic money, and they're using this in symbolic ways. So very little has changed. And what's going to ultimately happen in the metaverse, everybody will be their own coin or their own token of value.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Don't let higher inflation erode the value of your hard-earned wealth. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management today at 888-486-3939 or email us at grow@financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Welcome to our special Forecast 2022 edition of The Big Picture, where we review the major forecasts and predictions by Wall Street. We'll also be reviewing the view of three investment firms, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and Charles Schwab, including a few notable strategists like Francois Trahan, Byron Wien, and others. In sum, it seems, Jim, that the consensus view is that returns will be quite a bit lower this year, but not many are calling for a bear market or recession in 2022.
What we're talking about here is the consensus. And one of the things that we've seen over the last couple of years, Chris, is the consensus has been off. In other words, the markets have performed much better than what was originally predicted. Probably the only guy that got it really close at the beginning of the year last year was Craig Johnson. He was probably the most bullish, and they never track him in the consensus view. We'll have him on the show and we'll get his view for this year. But what really strikes me when you look at this is we are now getting into another Fed rate raising cycle. It's my own opinion. It's going to take 2 to 5 years to get through this cycle, if they even get that far. Because the last time, as everybody recalls, we started raising interest rates in 2015. It almost took them 5 years. And as soon as they got up to 2.5, they immediately reversed it at the first signs that the economy was stalling and the markets were faltering. So let's get into the numbers. First of all, when it comes to GDP, last year came in at around 5.6%. That's probably the highest economic growth rate we've probably seen in well over a decade. And most of that came from the just ginormous amounts of government stimulus. And just give you an idea, in 2020, the Trump administration passed a $3 trillion COVID stimulus package. At the end of his presidency, he passed another $900 billion stimulus. Biden gets in, he passes a $1.9 trillion stimulus. Then they pass a $1.2 trillion infrastructure stimulus, and they're working on another $5 trillion stimulus. They're calling it $2 trillion, but the CBO said it's $5 trillion. So the economic growth rate that we saw in 2021 is probably the highest that we've seen in a long time, 5.6. Here's what the experts are predicting for 2022. 3.9% economic growth, and for 23, 2.5%. Now, I'm going to give you 22 and 23 because there's a point I want to make when we're done with this. Now, let's take a look at inflation. For 2021, the overall inflation for the whole year was 4.7%. We'll talk more about that later. For 2022, they see inflation coming down to 4.4%. And for 23, we will be down to 2.4%. So they're seeing this cutting back on the taper in rate hikes. They're saying that that's going to bring down the level of inflation. We're going to disagree with part of that, and we'll tell you about that when we get to our own forecast. Let's take a look at housing starts. And I'm not going to talk about resales and things like that, because the real key is housing starts. What's going on there? In 2021, 1,575,000 housing starts. They're saying for 22, despite a rise in mortgage rates, housing starts will be closer to 1,592 and 1,562 for 23. Now let's talk about the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate ended at 5.4% for the whole year. 3.9% is projected for this year. So despite the Fed rate hikes and the end of taper, they're saying that the unemployment rate will continue to fall until it reaches 3.5% in 2023.
So basically, Jim, so far, when it comes to the consensus view, GDP is going to be slightly lower to 4% compared to 5.6% for last year. Inflation just a tick lower, but not much, going from 4.7 to 4.4. Housing market still remaining strong, and the unemployment rate going down from 5.4% in 2021 to 4% in 2022. What's the outlook for interest rates, particularly when we're looking at the Fed funds rate and the rest of the bond market?
Well, let's take a look at the Fed funds rate. They're predicting it'll be 0.75%. So that would be probably 3 1/4 rate hikes for 22, and they're predicting 1.55% for 23, so another 3 rate hikes in the following year. Some good news for savers. Well, it's good in the sense that interest rates are going from zero. The 3-month Treasury bill is predicted to get up to 0.7% for 22, 1.4% for 23. The 2-year note is expected to get to 1.12 for 22, 1.6 for 23. And finally, this is key, and this is tied to the housing market. The 10-year note, which is on the day we're doing this, is at a little over 1.7%. The 10-year note is expected to go over 2% this year and 2.34% next year. So a gradual, slow increase. And why that's real key is the markets can absorb, at least initially, a smaller rate hikes. In other words, gradual rate hikes. You're not going to see what the Fed did in 1994, where they took the Fed funds rate from 3 to 6% in a single year, and 1999 in the year 2000, where they took it up very rapidly. That's just not in the cards anymore. They would basically collapse the economy and the markets if they were to do something that quick, despite the level of inflation. So what they're saying here is the Fed is going to be doing this, and they're going to be going very slow. So, you know, a lot of the strategists are saying that the Fed is behind the eight ball right now, way behind it, and they'll still be behind the eight ball going forward because there's just way too much debt in this economy for them to do this in a rapid fashion to contain inflation. The other thing that you have going here, Chris, is you have continuous government inflation policies. I saw in the news today that they're considering another COVID stimulus in addition to this Build Back Better plan, which is close to $5 trillion. I mean, this is absolute madness, which we'll get into later on. But gradual increase in interest rates. So if you have a money market fund, you might start to get some interest from it because it's been at zero and rates are going up, but they're still going to be well below the inflation rate.
Okay, so what's the consensus view on the stock market? And I know you have this broken down between the average, high, and low. So give us a range of where some of the analysts are lining up when it comes to expectations for the S&P 500 in 2022.
Okay, so first of all, I want to just give you a background of where we've been with the stock market for 3 years, because there are a lot of people out there, Chris, that have grown up into the investment world, and they've seen nothing but the stock market going up every year. So let me put this in perspective. In 2019, the stock market was up 30.43%. It was up 33% if you consider dividends. In 2020, the stock market was up 15.75%, almost up 18% with dividends. And for 2021, it was up 26.6%, 28.4% if you include dividends. So we've seen three back-to-back double-digit returns in the stock market. And we're going to dissect 2021 in just a minute here. So let's take a look at what they're saying for 2022. The average is 49.50, which would imply roughly about a 3.5% return for the stock market. The median is 5,000, which would be about 4.5%. The high for the year would be 5,330, which would be about 11.4%. The low for the year would be 4,400, which would be a loss of 8%. So Wall Street is saying, look, the double-digit returns just not going to happen. And we'll get into a couple reasons why they're saying that. Most of it is going to be multiple compressions. In other words, the PE ratio is going to be coming down. Stocks will be selling at smaller PE ratios compared to what they are right now. And we'll get into that in just a moment.
You know, Jim, one thing that we were talking about quite a bit last year was how a large amount of the returns were being driven. We actually did some research on this and posted some charts just illustrating this visually. But a significant portion of the returns in the S&P 500 and the major indices were being driven just by a very, very small handful of stocks. Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, basically all the FANG stocks.
Yeah, let's start with the S&P. So as I mentioned, the S&P was up 26%. If you back out the top five companies in the S&P by market cap, the rate of return drops to 17%. And if you take the top 10 companies, the rate of return drops below 15%. Likewise with the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ up roughly about 24%. Take out the top five companies in the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ only returned 10%. If you take out the 10 companies in the NASDAQ was up only 5.5%. So clearly, as you get to sort of a market top, the troops falter and the generals carry the weight. And it was certainly a year where the top companies really carried the index because a lot of the companies were going through their own bear market. And let's just take a look at who those companies are. In the S&P and the NASDAQ, it's Apple. Number one. Number two is Microsoft. Number three is Alphabet. Number four is Amazon. Number five is Tesla. Number six is Meta Platforms, the former Facebook. Number seven, NVIDIA. Number eight in the S&P is Berkshire Hathaway. In the NASDAQ, it's ASML Holdings. Number nine is JP Morgan Chase in the S&P. It's Adobe in the NASDAQ. And then Visa in the S&P is number 10. Netflix is the one for the NASDAQ. So you can see it was a year where the stock market did well, but if you really wanted to do well, you had to be in those 5 or 10 stocks.
So again, the consensus expectation for S&P 500 returns, 3.45% for 2022, a lot lower than we saw in years prior. And again, we saw last year a very small number of stocks, mostly those FANG stocks, accounted for a bulk of the returns that we saw in the S&P 500. So there was a lot of crowding into those stocks that you mentioned. You were looking at two different views, one more on the bearish side, one more on the bullish side. Can you give us an idea of the contrast between each of those forecasts or expectations for this year from these major houses?
Yeah, if we want to take a look at the bullish side, BMO and Oppenheimer, we're going to have Ari Wald on the show next week, so he'll be giving us his view. BMO has the S&P hitting 5,300, and Oppenheimer has 5,330. They're the ones that think that we'll have another double-digit return. On the bearish side is Morgan Stanley. They're the ones that have the market dropping to 4,400, which would be an 8% loss for the year. So a little bit more, some divergences on some of the major firms in terms of where they see the market heading. Goldman Sachs is also bullish, and we'll get to them in just a moment.
Okay, but again, no expectations as far as a big bear market. I should point out, we did speak with Felix Zuloff just recently on our FS Insider program. He is a bit more on the bear side. He's thinking that we could see something akin to a 20% or more correction. So that would be a bear market in the first half of this year. And in fact, here's a clip from that interview regarding his outlook for the stock market, commodities, and many other sectors of the economy for 2022.
I do believe that we are looking at a very important medium-term peak, but I do not believe that it's the end of this current market cycle. I think the market cycle will most likely stretch into 24, but what we are facing now is a medium-term top, and then a very decisive decline. Almost 40% of the NASDAQ stocks have declined 50% or more. And you do not see that because you have a handful of stocks in the S&P and in the NASDAQ that dominate that index and those two indices to such a large degree that you do not see what's going on under the surface.
So Felix isn't bearish for the stock market as a whole for this year, per se, but did outline a large number of reasons for why he is very cautious right now and believes we are looking at a pretty big correction and possibly a bear market in the first half of this year. And this might be underway right now. Felix also had a very interesting outlook on energy and gold. So if any of you haven't listened to that full interview yet, feel free to hit subscribe on our website, financialsense.com, and you can gain access to all of our premium interviews we conduct during the week. But as far as these major investment houses or Wall Street firms, no expectations, it sounds like, for a bear market or recession in 2022.
No. And likewise, you know, they didn't give their forecast for the stock market in 2023. But if you're looking at their projections that the economy will be growing at 2.5%, it's pretty hard to have a bear market when you're not in a recession. So likewise, probably no bear market for 2023, despite an additional 3 rate hikes by the Fed. And if you look at that, Chris, even if they were to do 3 rate hikes this year, 3 rate hikes next year, it would only take the Fed funds rate to 1.5% versus traditionally for almost half a century. The Fed would take interest rates from 3% to 6%. They would raise it to 6%, almost 7 when they were trying to tighten. And then they would take it down to 3% when they'd want to loosen in a recession. So the big question is, and it's one of the wild cards we'll talk about later on, can they do this and engineer a soft landing? To my knowledge, they only did it once, and that was 1994. We have a saying here on the show, they will raise interest rates until they break something, which they usually do. So now let's take a look at some of the views from some of the big firms. Let's go with Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs predicts they're a little bit higher on the GDP rate. They think we'll hit about 4.5% on economic growth in 2022. They think global earnings will be up about 8%. They think the S&P 500 will hit 5,100. So once again, That's a 10% rate of return, total return. So you, once again, double digits. And fueling that, in their opinion, is negative yields. And what I mean by that, if you take the official inflation rate, which is 7%, and you take the 10-year bond yield, which is expected to get to 2%, you're still 5% below the inflation rate, which is really a negative yield. Now, one of the things that they think is going to support that, once again, is these rising yields, rising earnings. They do see a rise in inflation and bond yields. And they are basically saying this year, what you need to focus on, they have four categories if you want to make money. And they boil this down to the disruptors, companies using technology to disrupt other industries. Think of what Amazon has done to retailing. Enablers, powering social and economic change and decarbonization, moving towards this green economy. And then what they call the adapters, adapting business models to generate higher returns. So they're on the bullish side. So now let's go to the negative side, which is the view from Morgan Stanley. They see earnings growing at 8 to 10% this year. So corporate profits are going to still go up. But as interest rates go up with inflation, you're going to see a multiple contraction. In other words, PE ratios are going to be dropping. So even though earnings are going up, investors are going to be unwilling to pay a higher PE multiple. And that's where we got a lot of these returns in the stock market over the last 2 years. Now, earnings were up about 45% last year. A lot of that was just coming back from a recession and the COVID lockdowns. But even though earnings are expected to go up, investors aren't going to be willing to pay more for those earnings. So therefore, they expect the year, by the end of the year, the stock market will be down about 8%. Their favorite picks are healthcare, real estate, and financials. Obviously, if interest rates are being increased by the Fed, that helps banks and their lending. They make more money. Real estate is expected to be strong along with healthcare. The key focus for them is multiple contraction and higher bond yields that are going to be followed by greater economic and earnings uncertainty. I mean, just think of the stuff that we experienced in the last couple of years. We've seen stuff we've never seen in our lifetime. They expect the 10-year yield to get to 2.1%. The PE ratio on the S&P drops from over 21 down to 18. There you get your multiple contraction. Now, they did throw out two scenarios. If things really get uncertain, in other words, if things don't go as well with the Fed trying to tighten their bearish case, you could see the S&P drop to 3,900, which would give you almost a 20% bear market. Their bullish scenario, if everything goes right, and maybe the Fed doesn't raise as much as they're anticipated, earnings are higher, the economy takes off, economic growth is stronger, their bullish case is 5,000, which would be slightly less than about a 5 or 6% rate of return. And so the one thing that Morgan Stanley gets into, which you know we've talked a lot about here, is how inflation is understated. And they basically said, and this is from a report, when combined with the outsourcing of higher paying jobs over the past 20 years, it makes perfect sense why the populist wave that began over 5 years ago led to a significant minimum wage increase in social unrest. The changing of the calculation over the years, particularly in 1990, have resulted in the CPI potentially understating inflation for years, and especially right now. And what they're saying, that one of the real things to look for this year is we're not really talking about wage inflation, which was the big inflation story in the 1970s. So that is the view from Morgan Stanley. They're probably the most bearish on the street, with BMO and Oppenheimer probably some of the most bullish on the street. So at least you've got a little balance there as to what people think is going to happen.
Yeah, and the thing with inflation too is even if it's understated officially by just a couple percent, well, after 5 years, 10 years, that really adds up.
It sure does. And it also, as we did a show for lifetime income, that if you are doing financial planning, saving for the future, you're going to have to deal with three uncertainties: inflation, taxes and financial repression, keeping interest rates well below the inflation rate, which is how you inflate away the debt. Now, let's get to Charles Schwab, and this is mainly from their head strategist, Lizanne Saunders. She's not a portfolio manager, but one of the first things she talks about, the politicians are still stuck on stupid in handling COVID with restrictions, lockdowns, and mandates. You remember flattening the curve, the reason for shutting down the economy? That didn't work. The lockdowns didn't work, nor are the mandates working. The other thing she's talking about is something we haven't seen. Most of the issues that we were dealing in the past were demand-side issues, people wanting more stuff. What she's saying, the pandemic has exposed the instability in a complex global supply chain, possibly ushering in a coming secular environment of pervasive supply shocks versus the demand shocks that were more commonplace for much of the past two decades. And she's talking about now you're starting to see a lot of manufacturers and businesses go from just-in-time inventory, keeping your inventory cost to a minimum and down, to just-in-case inventory, meaning we better stock up because with supply chain problems, we might not be able to get the stuff. And a good example is what happened to Apple. I mean, good luck trying to get an iPad, iWatch, or iPhone during the Christmas season. You know, Best Buy sold out. If you went on Apple's website, they were telling you, well, you might not get the delivery for Christmas, and it may be January or February. So that's something that she talked about. She also talked about wages. I mean, the policy the government is implementing, rewarding non-work by giving you higher, let's say, unemployment benefits and creating a situation where it's more profitable not to work. The other thing is the mandates are creating shortages in healthcare, first responders, in other industries, airlines. When you start saying to somebody, you either get the vaccine or you lose your job, a lot of people are choosing, given a lot of the negative effects with vaccines. And then we're finding out, just unlike what they told us, if you get the vaccine, you can still get COVID. And so a lot of this stuff with the mandates is creating a lot of issues in the labor markets and labor wage inflation, which we'll get to, could be one of the big issues, very similar to what we saw and experienced during the 1970s. She also expects that service inflation. Remember when we had the lockdowns? You weren't spending money on services. You weren't going out to restaurants, gyms, and the other things that you couldn't do because the dumb lockdowns that they put into place. So people were saving money. Well, what did they do? They took the stimulus checks, the money they were saving, and they started buying stuff. So it was hard to get things like appliances. Look at the chip shortages, what that did to the auto industry. So we're likely to see service inflation pick up. And she talks about the next hit to asset prices could deliver a knockout blow, because what we're seeing is the University of Michigan consumer sentiment is rolling over and it's hitting to a new low. And part of that is consumers experiencing inflation that is more likely in the double digits if we were to measure it accurately as we once did. I think John Williams at Shadow Stats thinks we're over 12% right now. But the other thing she said when it comes to investing, and I agree with this 100%, getting completely out of the market or getting in or getting out is not in an investment strategy. And her overall advice is stick with quality companies. We're seeing that right now in the difference between the performance of the S&P, the NASDAQ, compared to the Dow, which has a high contingent of high dividend quality companies. So that's the view from Charles Schwab.
And obviously that closely aligns with what we're doing, is sticking with high quality dividend paying companies for investors that obviously need income, especially looking at companies that are raising their dividends to keep pace with inflation. In addition to Lizanne Saunders at Charles Schwab, we also follow Francois Trahan's work. We've had him on the show in the past. What is he thinking or expecting for this year?
For 2022, it's U.S. equities meet stagflation. So lower economic growth, higher inflation, the rise in bond yields. He sees an economic slowdown as the LEIs begin to roll over. He also said that the Fed missed its biggest opportunity to get things in order by allowing pumping money into the economy well beyond what they should have. That's been one of the critiques of the Powell Fed. They should have been implementing this well over a year ago when the economy was picking up. And he said the two big macro events likely to impact the stock market in 2022 are a sustained downtrend in the PMIs and Fed tightening. Now, one of the things he talks about, and I'm going to get into these in particular because I think they have a lot of relevance. Five things for investors to worry about in 2022. The first of these is debt levels of the U.S. economy is not seen since World War II. Chris, I mean, we are just going bananas in Washington with the spending spree. I mean, it is unsustainable, and it's going to lead to a major problem shortly. I mean, we hit $29 trillion in November. We've already added $400 billion in debt. And Chris, that's before all these programs, the infrastructure bill. They still have the $2 trillion stimulus bill from the beginning of last year. And believe it or not, the Build Back Better, the CBO scored it. That's a $5 trillion stimulus. And they're already talking on the news today of another COVID stimulus on top of this. I mean, this is absolutely insane. But nonetheless, when you believe in modern monetary theory, if you have your debt denominated in your own currency, well, you just simply print as much as you want. The only problem with the U.S. is not all of that debt is owned by the U.S. I think 40% of our debt is owned by foreigners. Number two, home prices at peak valuation of the housing bubble. You are starting to see a decline in sentiment towards housing, and you're starting to see a softening in the real estate market. So that's issue number two. Issue number three, the inflation backdrop a la 1970s. And the most important, the dynamic driving much of the inflation story is the same. Wage inflation, courtesy of unbalanced labor markets and continuous government stimulus. It's an inflation-induced slowdown is likely to be one of the biggest stories of 2022, with an impact on the LAIs. Usually, when that hits up, there's about an 18-month to 24-month lag period. So that's a big issue. And then Fed policy behind the curve like never before. And this is one of the big criticisms. It's not just that we've heard from Trahan, where you take a look at in the 90s, we had high unemployment with low inflation. The tech bubble, we had high unemployment, low inflation. Today, we have low unemployment, but higher inflation. So the big elephant in the room is basically inflation. And then, of course, the equity valuation of the Nifty 50 tech bubble. We covered that. Instead of the Nifty 50, I would call it the Fab 5 of these stocks that are having multiple, in the case of Apple, $3 trillion valuation. So that's sort of the view, Chris, from some of the strategists and the key investment houses on Wall Street. So the overall message here, stocks will outperform bonds. Bonds are going to be a losing proposition for 2022 as interest rates rise. And as Frank talked about, you just take a look at TLT drop about 4 or 5%. So it could be another bad year for bond investors. So not a good message coming for bond investors. But overall, Wall Street sees modest returns for the stock market and higher interest rates and a lessening of inflation coming down gradually, but still economic growth over the next 2 years.
I think what you had listed with Francois Trahan's five worries in 2022 is certainly ringing true for a lot of people, and that's the inflation-induced slowdown, because now inflation has become the number one worry for consumers. On top of that, the Fed has now become very concerned about inflation. Recent minutes just came out, and a lot of Fed members talking about their worries about that getting it out of hand. So as you said in the very beginning, expectation currently is for 3 rate hikes. We'll discuss this a little bit later in the show, but Byron Wien believing that we'll actually see 4 rate hikes. But let's move on to one investment strategy that many people have probably heard about. That's the dogs of the Dow.
Each year on January 1st, you buy the 10 highest dividend-paying stocks within the Dow 30 Industrials. And, you know, that's a strategy that has worked. It hasn't worked in the last couple of years because it's been more about growth than it's been value. So this is kind of like a value approach to investing. But one of the things I think the dogs of the Dow should do much better this year, if you're talking about lower rates of return for the stock market, well, if you get a higher dividend yield, you know, most of your return could be coming from dividends. I mean, if they're talking about the average for the market this year up 3.5%, some of the yields I'm going to be listing here in the dogs of the Dow are much better than that. For example, let's take the top 10 dividend yielding stocks in the Dow. Verizon has a yield of 5.89. That's a stock Warren Buffett owns. Dow Chemical, 5.14. International Business Machines, 5.06. Chevron, 4.59. Walgreens Boots, 4.59. Merck, 3.8. 3M, 3.4. Amgen, 3.16. Coca-Cola, 2.89, another Warren Buffett stock, and Intel, 2.77. So you can see, Chris, when you're talking about maybe the total return for the market at 3.5%, if you own Verizon, you're getting almost 6%, 5% in Dow and 5% in International Business Machines, and almost a little over 4.5% for Chevron. And some of the former, I think it's Exxon, has got a yield a little over 5%. That used to be a Dow stock, but no longer.
So that's the dogs of the Dow. Let's now move on to Blackstone's Byron Wien's top 10 surprises for this year and some of the things that he is telling investors on what to expect for 2022.
These are things that you believe the public says there's maybe a 1 in 3 chance of happening, but you think are more probable.
Better than 50% chance.
Better than 50% in your assessment. Okay. The bond market begins to respond to rising inflation and tapering by the Federal Reserve. And the yield on the 10-year Treasury rises to 2.75%. Fed completes its tapering and raises rates 4 times in 2022. So you think the Fed's going to have to hustle here?
Right. I'm not in the transitory camp. I think inflation is here to stay. You may get some correction in commodity prices. Oil may come down before it goes back up. But I think rents and wages are headed higher, and that's going to drive the overall consumer price index and employment cost index higher.
And just to get to, you know, you feel like the stock market's going to be caught in the middle here a bit when strong earnings growth and economic activity, but fighting the headwind of rates.
I think the market isn't going to do much this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had 3 great years, I think 29, 16 and 27%. I don't think we're going to have a 4th great year. On the other hand, I don't think we're going to have a bear market. I think we could have a correction anytime along the way. Mm-hmm. But basically, I think the market will hover around where it is right now for the rest of the year. I do think gold will do well this year. Gold has not performed in previous years. And I think this is a year that people will focus on it. Gold could be up 20% this year.
So, Jim, how well did his predictions make it for 2021?
Well, actually, for 2021, he had a pretty good track record. The unemployment rate falls below 5%, and the economy grows at 6%. He got that one right. West Texas Intermediate crude rises to 65. Well, actually got higher, but energy stocks are among the best performers in 21. He nailed that one. And a couple other things he got is the equity markets, the S&P, would hit 4,500, which was pretty close on that one. The Treasury yield would hit 2%, got about as high as 1.7%, and the slide in the dollar turns around. So overall, I would give him a pretty good grade for 2021. So let's take a look at what he's forecasting for 2022. We're already starting to see this. Value outperforms growth, and especially if you're talking about value with high dividends like the dogs of the Dow, and also with higher interest rates, it's a multiple contractor for the big growth stocks that we've seen in the Fab Five. Prices of some commodities decline, wages and rents continue, and inflation increases by 4.5% for the year. That's probably right in there with the consensus. As we talked about earlier, the consensus right now is 4.4%. Here's a big one. Boy, this would not look good. 10-year Treasury rises to 2.75%, that would definitely hurt the stock market and also the housing market. In spite of Omicron, people spend 3 to 4 days a week in the office and they return to theaters, concerts, and sporting events. In other words, while COVID remains a problem in the developed world, normal conditions are restored. Number five, Chinese policymakers respond to a recent turmoil in the country's property market by curbing speculation and investment in housing. As a result, there's more capital from Chinese households that needs to be invested. Number six, this is a big one. The price of gold rallies by 20% to a new record high, and gold reclaims its title as a haven for newly minted billionaires. In other words, the billionaires, instead of cryptos, go to gold. Number seven, while major oil-producing countries conclude that high oil prices are speeding up the implementation of alternative energy, he still sees oil hitting $100 a barrel, which is going to be a problem on the inflation front and for the Fed, because the only way the Fed can do anything about oil prices is simply to kill the economy and break it. Number eight, nuclear power, an alternative for generation. You're not going to get a green transition without nuclear. Number nine, ESG evolves beyond corporate policy statements. Government agencies develop and enforce new regulatory standards that require public companies in the U.S. to publish information on their progress on various metrics deemed critical to the green economy. And number 10, in a setback to its green energy program, the United States finds it cannot buy enough lithium batteries to power electric vehicles planned for production. No kidding. I mean, where are we going to get the copper, the lithium, the nickel, and all these things to run the economy? And more importantly, how are you going to drive electricity with added electricity demand without nuclear power plants when you're shutting down nuclear power plants or shutting down nat gas plants? Now, some of his also-rans, the FDA approves the first gene editing treatment. Let's see what else he's got here. The digital economy gets a major boost when Jamie Dimon reverses his position on cryptocurrencies. I think that's already taken place. And the United States and China both seek to become global leader in advanced semiconductor capabilities. Puerto Rico becomes the new retirement destination of choice. If you move to Puerto Rico and establish residency there, you don't pay federal taxes. Maybe something that we all consider down the road. Maybe that'll become the most populous future state. That's the view from Byron Wien. Overall, a pretty good year for his 2021 predictions. Some of these 2022, I'm with him on gold and oil. And I don't know if interest rates get that high. I'd have a hard time seeing the stock market hit 4,500 if 10-year yields get to 2.75%.
Yeah, and when you're talking about Byron predicting what we're going to see with ESG investing, continued policy efforts in that direction, and then some of the impacts that that is going to be having on the investment landscape, particularly when we're talking about renewable energy and even the fossil fuels sector, that's actually a nice segue into Steen Jacobsen at Saxo Bank. Here's what he had to say when it came to some of the things that they're looking at for this year.
We are saying that the physical world is too small for the political aspiration and narrative of the policymakers. What we mean by that is that you cannot push, as you do in Norway, to drive electric vehicles and then at the same time run an ESG program on mining and fossil and metals and batteries. That makes zero sense. And just for the record, it makes zero difference to the world whether 100% of Norwegians drive an electric vehicle or not. While you are buying more and more subsidized electric vehicles, what is happening over in China is that they consume 30% of global electricity, which they produce 70% of by using coal burning. On top of that, it's even worse in India and in Russia. But that physical world versus the practicality of what goes on needs to be respected. And it's actually one of our outrageous calls this year that we're saying there will be a rain check on the fossil energy sector. What we mean by that is that we fully buy into the concept of electric vehicles. We fully buy into the concept of renewable energy. But it is not the solution. It is part of the solution. It is not the solution. The solution is to build a tangible, implementable infrastructure rollout. The more electric vehicles you buy, the more you're metallizing the world. So basically, when you decarbonize the world, you're metallizing the world. On top of that, you create, because of ESG constraints, you create an inelasticity in supply from the mining and the fossil energy sector because the cost of capital is through the roof, 15, 20% if you can raise capital at all. You cannot do greenfielding, you cannot do brownfielding. And even the board members on these fossil energy companies and the mining companies, they are livid afraid of being sued by investors, by regulators, by private citizen groups and others because they are in a polluted business. So what is happening right now is that these two worlds, the political financial world, which is driven entirely by talking, is now meeting a reality of people who practically need to deliver these services. And that means, in my opinion, that the financial world need to reprice the cost of energy, the price of mining products higher, and relatively reduce the price of something like platform companies and Teslas and others.
So that was Steen Jacobsen at Saxo Bank, and then they produce their outlook every year along with their outrageous predictions. So Jim, what is it that they're looking at for this year?
Number one, the plan to end fossil fuels gets a rain check. He was just talking about that. It's unrealistic in their time frame that, Chris, this is why they're heading us towards our prediction that we're going to have a major energy crisis mid-decade, is they're trying to push this agenda without thinking it through. And so that, I think, is going to have a check. Facebook face plants on youth exodus. He's talking about the young abandon Facebook's platform. They're trying to reel them in through Meta, which will fail. The U.S. midterm elections brings a constitutional crisis. That's one of the big issues right now, where the Democrats are going to push forth a bill where the federal government will control elections rather than the states. That's being addressed right now. Number four, U.S. inflation reaches 15% on a wage price spiral. And that's something Liz Ann Saunders at Charles Schwab talked about, and also Francois Trahan. Nobody's paying attention to this wage, but government policy is going to drive wage inflation much higher. Number five, EU Superfund for Climate, Energy, and Defense announced to be funded by private pensions. Number six, Women's Reddit Army takes on the corporate patriarchy. Number seven, India joins the Gulf Cooperation Council as a non-voting member. Number eight, Spotify disrupted due to NFT-based digital rights platform. Number nine, new hypersonic tech drives, space race, and a new Cold War. Where are we talking about space? I mean, just look at what some of these billionaires are doing, from Elon Musk to Jeff Bezos. And number 10, some good news here. Medical breakthroughs extend the average life expectancy to 25 years. Boy, you're going to have a lot of savings if you live that long.
And here's a clip of what he talks about when it comes to the 2022 midterm elections coming up and one of the outrageous predictions that they have in place for that.
You can get into trouble doing what we do here in terms of calling the outrageous calls. But for me, I think we already have one which politically is very outrageous, and that is this constitutional crisis potentially emerging at the back end of a midterm election. So, you know, what we're saying there is that the discrepancies in interpretation of the results that we saw during Biden versus Trump, imagine we have a tight midterm election. You can have single states who wants to do secession. You can have people not wanting to recognize it, and we get into a state of chaos. I think for the world, at a time where the U.S. is backtracking on its global policeman job, I think that would be detrimental. I don't want to, because I'm not a negative person, despite all these outrageous calls. I don't want to talk about wars, but that is evident that can happen. But I think the common theme around the world is that, you know, we are trying to solve issues with more debt. We are trying to be in the political space non-accountable. And I think if you look at what we are suggesting this year, it is really outrageous. But what has changed over the last 20 years is that the gap between reality and outrageous is the smallest ever.
So there you have it. That's Steen Jacobsen at Saxo Bank talking about one of their wild cards and outrageous predictions for this year being a constitutional crisis heading into the midterm elections. And one of the things that he says is, if you take what we saw with Biden and Trump and the election uncertainty that took place there, well, now imagine that same scenario playing out not just for the national elections, but for each state election. And so that could be very chaotic if we saw something like that.
Well, it's being played out right now. Senator Schumer just came out today and said if they don't go along with this voting bill they're putting in effect, where the federal government would essentially take over elections from the states, which is unconstitutional, but nonetheless, they are pushing it. So this could be one that comes out to happen with Saxo Bank's predictions.
So aside from a potential constitutional crisis this year and some of the other outrageous predictions, what are some wild cards that you think we could see or be facing this year?
You know, Chris, after the disaster in Afghanistan, I mean, people don't understand. We still have Americans that are stranded there. We could see a geopolitical problem. China goes for Taiwan, or right now we've got, what, a couple hundred thousand troops, Russian troops on the Ukrainian border. Russia makes a play for Ukraine unless they get what they want from the administration. So geopolitical things are probably the hardest to predict, but they're certainly out there. And I think oil prices over $100 a barrel. I think one of your guests that you had on recently thinks that we could hit $200.
Yeah, that was actually Felix Zuloff, and he was thinking that wouldn't happen this year, but probably in a few years' time.
Yeah, and this is a supply-created problem by lack of investment, by shutting down so many things from pipelines to drilling, to getting involved in having major oil companies divest of their oil assets. So oil beyond $100 could be a reality. The other one, too, is inflation is higher than expected and unable to be controlled. And this is two areas Charles Schwab touched on. One, and Francois Trahan, which is what's happening on the labor front. We can't get workers. Businesses are having to pay more. We're laying off people for vaccine mandates, so we have a shortage in many industries right now. The other one is a Fed policy mistake. They get this one wrong. Let's say inflation spikes higher than expected, and they decide to go for it and really start ratcheting up interest rates, like Byron Wine thinks that, you know, we could get maybe 4 rate hikes. And then another thing that Lizanne Saunders talked about is the stuck on stupid with our politicians, the COVID lockdowns and mandates, which don't work. I mean, really? I mean, have you taken some of these things, Chris? I mean, people, I think, are seeing the stupidity of this. Like, if I walk in a restaurant, I put on a mask, and if I'm standing, I need that because I could get COVID. But the minute I sit down at the table to eat, I can't get COVID. Or as you experienced last year, you could walk on the beach, but you couldn't stand or sit, or we couldn't go sailing in the bay. I mean, there's just some of the stuff is just outright stupid. And that's being stuck on stupid. And they're talking about doing some of this stuff. So it's they're wild, but they're certainly out there, and some of the stuff could be realized.
Yeah, when it comes to, you know, COVID lockdowns and mandates, you know, I know you spoke with Jim Bianco on the show not too long ago, and he was predicting we would see increasing wave of restrictions just given what we see in Europe and how quickly we've seen the caseload pick up. And of course, politicians, policymakers, health officials are conditioned to looking at cases instead of hospitalizations and deaths. So, this is causing a growing divide. Again, going back to this idea of a constitutional crisis, some people like Ray Dalio even talking about a civil war. COVID is exacerbating a lot of these tensions. So 2022 is going to be an interesting year. Not to say that the past 2 years haven't been interesting, but as always, we at Financial Sense Wealth Management are making sure that we navigate the markets and the investment landscape, looking at the secular long-term trends, whether or not that's inflation, increasing taxes, and many of the things that we discuss, to make sure that all of our clients are properly invested, and we provide financial planning services, asset management, 401k servicing as well. So if you want to give us a call about our investment outlook, what we are specifically doing, and how we can assist you, you can give us a call at 888-486-3000. 3939, or you can also contact us by going to financialsense.com and clicking where it says contact us.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we want to wish you a happy and prosperous new year and a very pleasant weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.